All right. Good morning, St. Louis, and welcome. Welcome to the illustrious Home Improvement Show right here on KMOX. I'm Rich Joris, your go-to guy for everything from fixing that pesky leaky faucet and to all the way to planning a dream remodel, anything you need. Each week, we're here to help you tackle all your home maintenance and remodeling projects head on, and I'm super excited to do it, and I love to take your calls. If you've got a question, maybe you're looking at adding a little curb appeal, or you're finally ready to start a that kitchen upgrade that you've always wanted. Whatever it is, give me a ring. We're right here, 314-436-7900. I will be here to give you some straightforward advice, share some tried and true tips, and help make the most out of your home today. So let's get those calls rolling in. Again, you can reach me at 314-436-7900. Just get a little advice. I'll be here for all your home improvement needs. And last week, we had some really good conversations. We went over a few different things. One, really, when Elias called in, he needed some help kind of talking about some slow drains at their church and trying to see if there's something they could do to kind of help that. And he was a little worried about putting something in the pipes that might harm it. Someone had kind of said vinegar works, try that. And he was worried about the vinegar in the pipes. And it is kind of, that is a real thing. There is some homemade effective drain unclogging solutions out there. And baking soda and white vinegar with some boiling water can make a really good way to kind of break things up and push things through. So in with older pipes, you get into cast iron pipes, you don't really have to worry as much about that vinegar. I mean, it's a good solid pipe. They would advise, though, watch the boiling water in newer homes and in your PVC pipes. It can damage some of those. You do it too much too often. So it is, boiling water is obviously really, really hot, but to do it a little bit every now and then and try and clear some things up might not be that bad. And basically what you do is pour about half a cup of baking soda directly into that clogged drain, and then you can follow that up with a cup of white vinegar, and it's going to kind of start fizzing and reacting. And some even say if you can close the drain or cover it up with something to kind of try and keep that down in there, let that sit maybe 20 minutes or so, and then you can flush through some either as hot a water as you can get or boiling water. If you have PVC pipes, maybe just let that boiling water cool a little bit before you pour it down there, but flush through a few cups of some really hot water and see if that helps. If you do have some pretty stubborn clogs, then we are going to kind of say maybe get in with the professional, have them professionally done. They've got a lot of different ways to get in and unclog, and they have tools to grab things and pull stuff out. They've got their augers. They got water jet for your pipes underneath your basement floor and outside. There's different ways to do this professionally that really works really well. But for some of those minor clogs, you can really, these formulas work pretty well in your typical drains with your grease, your soap, and other organic buildups. It's going to work quite well. So, but we also had Sue called in, was looking for a little advice on removing pet owner stickers from her front door. It was actually a Mosby door, a Provia door that we installed. And she was trying to find out some good ways to get that sticker off of there. And it brings up, a really good point of, if you have those stickers and you don't have pets anymore, really, or if kids, there's the stickers with, you know, there's so many kids inside, there's so many pets inside, warning the fire department, just what to try and find and everything. So when once that changes, you know, please think about that and go around and take those stickers off, because you really don't want them in there trying to find somebody or a pet or someone that's not there if they don't need to, for everyone's safety. So that's a great idea for sure to think about if you've been in your home a long time and those situations have changed. And just like me, both my kids moved out of our house. And so today, this morning, was my day. My wife got up. She's like, "What are you doing? Why are you upstairs?" And I'm just kind of checking things out, making sure things are running, setting the upstairs thermostat to make sure it's, I don't run it very hot, but keep it from freezing over winter. So set that temperature to not necessarily have to completely heat upstairs, but you definitely don't want anything freezing, all of that. Flushing toilets, just making sure things are working and running, and that there's no issues about if you have empty space like that. That's definitely a great idea to do. Go outside, take that walkabout outside. Beautiful day today, a little bit cool, but feels great. You can walk around and just really take a look and see what's going on, see if you see anything out of place, and then you can start to think about, do I need to get somebody to look at that? Is there something with the roof that just doesn't quite look right? You don't really have to understand it or be able to repair it to kind of see it and go, okay, that looks like it's kind of flapping in the wind, or that's pulling away. I try and do this a lot of times as I'm looking at people's homes every day during the week, to just kind of look around and go, oh, you've got a cracked piece of glass, you've got some nails pulling out here in the fascia and in the metal wrap from the siding, and just finding these small little things to kind of note and give them a heads up of, sometimes it's better to have some of these taken care of before you end up with the windstorm that starts blowing them away and pulling siding off the house, and you end up into this larger repair. So it's great to just have that look and see what's going on. And this is also a great time of year to look at your concrete, your control joints, your caulking, your ceiling. It's going to have great weather here for the next few weeks to get that concrete cleaned up, sealed, caulked, ready to go. Mary called in last week and kind of spoke about that, asked about that. And we talked a little bit about the reasons why, what it can lead to, and why it's a good idea to do that. So I like to kind of go over some of this with you, because so you know, you can go back. You can get in the Odyssey app or wherever you get all your podcasts from. You can search for this KMOX Home Improvement Show, and you can go back and listen to last week, the week before. They're all there for you. So I love to kind of go over the ground we covered in case it sparks something for either a question here today, or go back and take a listen to things that we've done in the past. So again, remember, I'm right here for you. Let's get into our first break, but right here, right now, you can give me a call. 314-436-7900 finds me. Don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back. All right, here we go. Welcome back. And don't forget, what really makes this show what it is, what gets me to help everybody, like I do for Mosby Building Arts all day, every day, during the week, going around helping people talk about their remodels, talk about maintenance issues, things they need done, how they get these taken care of, what's the best ways to do things. Well, I love to do that here every Saturday for you guys. And again, you can reach me with any of your maintenance or home remodeling questions at 314-436-7900. Don't be shy. We've got a lot we can do. We've got a lot we can cover. But what really makes this show great and what it is helping St. Louis and being a part of this wonderful town and everything about it to make everyone's home the best it can possibly be. Again, give me a shout, 314-436-7900. And something we talk about quite often on the show, and I kind of talk about it a little bit during the week as I'm explaining what we do and how we do it and what makes our company and Scott Mosby's company different. We have a lot of conversations about happy clients, happy employees, what really makes happy employees, and how does that help make happy clients? And then when you get into this type of remodeling and things that we're doing too, you have to think a lot about who they are, where do all these employees kind of stack up on the scale, and what position and where should they be, and how do you train them, and how do you know where they should be, and how you get through all that. So there is a lot that goes into figuring all that out and getting through it and having training processes and having processes for the company that we go through in order to make sure everybody's on the same page, having just a different company culture that really helps keep everybody on the same page. So there's a lot that we do and that we talk about as a company with and to our employees so that everyone understands and everyone's on the same page and trying to get the same thing accomplished for everyone. And then you in turn come around and end up with happy clients and good quality projects and all the things that fall into place once you do that. So I'll get deeper into that a little bit later, but we've got a couple calls coming in. So we've got Bob on the line. So let's get straight to Bob and see what's going on. Can you hear me, Bob?
Yes, I can, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for calling in. What's going on?
Good. My question is about installing gutter guards. I got a new roof recently, and I opted not to have them change the gutters. They're still in really good condition. They may have should be a little bit wider. I think I have the 5-inch gutter versus the 6-inch gutter.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, so I have a drip edge now along the gutter edge of the roof, which I did not have before.
Okay,
so
good.
And in years past, I had the plastic type gutter guards, you know, that 3-foot-long sections, and I just basically put it up underneath the roof shingle, you know me, and then attached it at the gutter,
uh-huh,
at the open end at the other end. So then I decided, well, I'm going to go ahead and get these They're aluminum type, gutter guards. And, of course, they don't, I said, well, I don't think I should be putting this over the top of the drip edge. I think it should be at the bottom of the drip edge. Would you suggest that I'm doing it correctly?
Yes. So I would definitely recommend a gutter guard there if you're not changing gutters, getting new gutters, all that, that goes kind of flat on top of the gutter, between the front and the back of the gutter, and it'll be under that drip edge, and that way everything's below that shingle, the drip edge, and the roof once it's getting to that gutter guard and into your gutters, because it's not always in the favor to have any type of gutter guards that connect to the roof. There can be complications with that, so having one that is straight flat that goes right on top of the gutter and doesn't interconnect with all of that is a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, my thought was that, when you go buy them off the shelf, they're wider than they were. And like I said, without the drip edge, it probably wouldn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Just put it underneath the shingle and then, attach it on the very outer edge of your gutter system. But I had to take these things. I said, I don't want these things to just fall off. It comes with adhesive and all this weird stuff, but there's a whole bunch of holes drilled through it.
Yeah.
I said, what if I just take and bend it and custom fit it so that it'll go up underneath, the bottom portion of that drip edge?
Yeah.
So that kind of, that way it, the drip edge will work like it's supposed to. And, the way fits in there, it won't interfere. I ran water over the top. I said, oh, it works great. It runs down the way it's supposed to. It doesn't run underneath the roof shingle. you know, that kind of a thing. So that, does that sound right to you then?
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds right to me. Sounds better to me for sure, because that drip edge will be able to work the way it does. And if you do get a little curve or anything on that, and if you get water kind of going backwards or the way you don't want it, if you're in front of under the drip edge but in front of the part of the drip edge that hangs down, it's still going to do its job and kind of where it angles out, and it'll drip that into the gutter. I've seen those gutter guards, in particular the metal ones that are just like the screen. It's just like a big hold open kind of cross screen, and those curve. And I've seen those, water will follow that screen to the front and the back. And I've seen those actually put water behind the gutter because of the way they're installed. So if you're on the front side of that drip edge, but underneath it, it's going to work really well.
That's exactly what I was thinking. And I said, well, I tested it by, taking the hose out and just to see how it was going to run off. And it's perfect, because the way I first started doing it, I said, well, I'm going to just do the same thing. I'm going to test it and see how. I said, I don't think this is right, you know what I mean? But the material is, I just took a sawhorse and a couple of pieces of wood and my rubber mallet and just bent it the way I thought it should go.
Yeah.
And it's up there good, and I think it's working. It's functional as it should be, but I think sometimes, you know, when you buy the stuff off the shelf, they don't give you a whole lot of instructions on, you know, exactly where to put it.
Yeah.
And they don't fit, in other words. You know what I mean? So you have to kind of make it fit if it's metal.
Yeah, and they're just selling this product. They're like, oh, yeah, put it kind of like this, and everything's great. Trust me. And there's different circumstances all the time. So another thing for everyone out there to think about is if you do go on top of that drip edge, then you also got to think about winter, and you got to think about freezing. And if it's getting wet and then it's freezing overnight and that continues to happen, that could actually help ice damming go to the backside of that drip edge further up the roof. Water actually runs uphill when it freezes, and then it thaws again. Come the next morning or afternoon, the sun comes out and you start getting water from under the shingles behind the drip edge to your fascia, to the wood and everything, because it's getting behind that drip edge under that roof. And that can cause a whole nother layer of issues in the winter that you won't start seeing till spring.
Yeah, you can dam that water up, in other words. Yeah, and have it.
Then it freezes, it grows up the roof as it expands, and it keeps doing that. And it gets further up each time it freezes and works its way in. And, you just end up getting water in that way just during those freeze-thaw cycles in winter.
Yeah, I definitely did not want to mess up a new roofing job. I mean, they put a frost edge up there. You know, I think they did a good job of putting it together. But I wanted to make sure about those gutter guards, because I said, I think this thing should go well below, you know, as I stated earlier, I never had a drip edge there before, but now I do. So I said, I think it should go underneath it as far down below, as you can get it and still have it level and so forth. But appreciate you taking my call, and you just reassured me that I did it the right way.
Perfect. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for calling in. And I think, LaVon, if you can hold on through the break, we're right at the center of the hour here. We'll take a short break. We'll get to your call as soon as we return. And everybody else, feel free to give us a call. Again, 314-436-7900. Don't go anywhere. More to come after this. All right, we are back. And again, remember, we are here for you today, Home Improvement Show. We've got plenty of time, whole another hour after this one, all the way to 1 o'clock. So feel free to get in line, give us a call. Anything you got going on, 314-436-7900. We love hearing from you, just like we love hearing from LaVon on the phone. Hey, LaVon, am I saying your name correctly? Can you hear me?
You're doing well.
Okay, I appreciate that. I like to try and get it right.
I appreciate that. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, I'm starting to have some residue or spots on top of my bathroom ceiling, and I run an exhaust fan in there when I'm taking a shower, but continue to see different spots. What is the best resolution? Is it possibly the roof or something internal?
Well, yeah, so there's a lot of different things that can go into that, and what's in the attic is a part, and then what you're doing and how you're handling it from inside the bathroom is a part, and removing as much moisture as possible is definitely a large part of trying to keep all that from happening on your ceiling. And when you go into the attic, there's a whole insulation value of how much is in there, how well is it working, how well is it air sealed, and keeping temperature differences apart from, because in winter's a particularly bad time for that, because your temperature differences get really, really far apart. So when you shower in the winter and you take a really hot, moist shower, and you're trying to get rid of that moist, warm air, and your attic could be 20 degrees up there. It could be 85 or 90 warm, moist air with a lot of humidity in it in your bathroom, and kind of mixing between there and the attic. That's why that attic insulation can be so important. So the keys to trying to mitigate that from happening is starting with the bath fan itself and making sure that it's large enough for the size of your bathroom, that it's removing enough air. Because if you have a really large bathroom and you've got this really small Brone builder grade bath fan that's really only meant, it's like 40 CFMs, and it's only meant for a 5x8 sized bathroom. And if your bathroom is bigger, it's not going to get rid of the moisture very well. The other step of that, so once you know if you have the right fan, the next step in that is running that fan for longer than you're in the bathroom is a really, really good idea. So at Mosby here, we put those bath fans on a timer switch. To where, yeah, you can run that fan for 20 or 30 minutes. You hit a button, you walk out of the room, it'll run, it'll turn itself off. Another way you could do that is if you need a new fan to get a bigger one, you can get a fan that works on a motion. And you can program the fan, you kind of set it with a switch, how long you want it to run after it sensed the last motion in the room. So you can set that at 30 minutes. And then you don't even have to worry about the switch. You walk in the room, it turns on. You start taking a shower, it's just running. It just works when you're there, runs for 30 minutes after. And then the next step is to go up in the attic. And when you're in the attic, make sure you've got good insulation. Make sure you've got enough. Make sure it's kind of air sealed around where the fan's installed. Any light fixtures, you don't want the air from the attic and in the bathroom kind of co-mixing if you can stop it. And then making sure you've got enough insulation with the proper R value to keep the temperature difference apart. And then the last step is taking the pipe from that exhaust fan and running that outside of the house. Get it to the other side of the roof, to the other side of the sided wall, and then insulate that pipe so that it's not creating condensation on itself in a cold attic during winter while you're running warm air through it. So you put insulation around that pipe to do that. And you've got your damper to keep air out. And that's a good system that will help that the best that it can and work for you. And another thing I'll say real quick, too, is on the size of the bath fan, if you go online and just kind of Google search like a bathroom ventilation calculator, there's calculators out there that you could go, okay, my bathroom is 10 foot by 12 foot and it's 8 feet tall, and it will tell you how many what we call CFMs you need in a fan to move enough air to make it actually work for that bathroom. And then you can find out what yours is, and that's where you figure out if you need the new fan and what size fan to get. So Brohn and Panasonic, a lot of these have this on their website where they'll help you pick what size you need for the size of your bathroom.
Okay. I don't have a very big bathroom, but it's probably that matter of the heat and the condensation from the heat of the shower, because I like to have it nice and toasty.
Yeah. Yep.
And I believe...
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and then when in the winter, when it's really cold and that air is getting in the attic, it's basically creating condensation inside your attic, too, that's helping play a role in that.
Sure. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was possibly a roof issue, which it may be, too. But, that makes sense, what you're indicating. And Mosby does come to Illinois, correct?
Yes. Yes, we do. And we can look at it and determine if there's any roof issue or not. That and we have all the people. We install the bath fans and do that whole process. And we'll even talk about one more step in that process, which is a backdraft damper inside that line in case the damper on the roof were to have an issue and air started to get inside that pipe from the outside. We put a backdraft damper in it also. So that'll help keep cold air in the winter from coming in that pipe towards your bathroom, even if something goes wrong with the device that lets the air out of the house.
Okay.
So a lot of steps and a lot of pieces of the process to make it the best thing that it possibly can be.
Right. Well, I appreciate your show.
All right. Yeah, no, I hope that was helpful and love to help you out with that for sure. And I appreciate the call. Let's jump over to Michael and see what's happening there. Can you hear me, Michael?
Yes, sir. I sure can.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for your service. And I had a question about I do a walk around before winter hits every year, just to check to make sure all the siding and everything is okay. And I noticed this time when I walked around, on the front of the house is a brick veneer, and it runs just from one corner of the house to where the garage starts, and then from there on it's just all vinyl.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed where that veneer, where that brick veneer meets the vinyl siding on the left side of the house, there's a appears to be a gap between the bricks and the vinyl. It's maybe at the its biggest point, possibly about a quarter of an inch wide, and I'm just curious. Is that something to worry about when it starts freezing and thawing and et cetera, or should I do some sort of caulking material in there, or any other suggestions you may have?
So this is a vertical area going from like the ground up towards the roof where this gap is that you're talking about?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay. Because a horizontal transition is different than a vertical one.
Okay.
So it's definitely an area to be concerned about water getting inside of there and behind it. And hopefully the house is kind of built and wrapped and flashed in a way to where if water gets behind there, it knows where to go and it can come out at the bottom. And it has a released the way to come out. So if the house has done really, really well and it's managing the water behind the brick and the siding and everything that it needs, it's less of a concern. But you can caulk that J channel to the brick vertically. What I definitely recommend is when you get to the bottom, if it's sitting on top of something, don't caulk it at the very, very bottom. Because you want anything that gets back there, any rainwater, anything, to be able to come out. at the bottom. And that's why a horizontal is different, like a horizontal transition. If you had brick that stopped 3 feet high and it turned into vinyl siding and it was horizontal and there was a piece of flashing there, I would say don't caulk it. Leave the gap because that's where water can actually exit from behind the siding to the on top in the face of the brick. So it's really, if the house is done right, it's more just to mitigate how much water gets back there. You can caulk it on that vertical seam, and that would be better. And just make sure that you stop at the bottom where you know water has a way out once it gets to the bottom there.
Okay, great. And what product would you recommend using on that as far as the caulking would go?
So I would use a urethane-based caulk. I would not use silicone.
Okay.
Just because silicone doesn't actually expand and contract quite as much as vinyl can. So a stickier urethane type that will expand a little bit more and stick better and stretch with that vinyl a little better will last longer. And you just want to make sure you kind of clean the brick as best you can from dust and all of that to where it'll stick to the brick side. And you'll be good with a urethane base.
Okay, great. Well, I certainly appreciate your advice, and I'll get on it before it starts getting freezing out.
yep. Yeah, and you can't get that urethane base like OSI caulk, something like that. You can get it in multiple different colors, so you can get something close to that siding color or close to the brick color where it'll look really good, too, with they got a ton of different colors. So good luck with that, Michael. We got to get into our final break of the hour here. When we come back, we'll have plenty of time in the next segment and then into the next hour for everyone's questions, calls, and conundrums all about your house, all about your home. 314-436-7900 is where you'll find me. And don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial. We'll have more home improvement right after this. All right, we are back. Plenty of time. Got a whole nother hour after this segment for everybody. 314-436-7900 is where you'll get to me. And let's, speaking of getting to me, let's jump to Kevin and see what is going on as promised. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. Love your show. Got a question. This past summer, my basement leaked, and I have a walkout. I don't have a sump pump. I built the house 21 years ago. Once again, no sump pump. I did put a French, I guess you call it a French drain, at the bottom of the foundation on each side of the house.
Okay.
And we had a terrible rainfall a couple times, and I end up, when I say I had water, I had at least an inch to 2 inches of water that came into my basement twice now.
Okay.
So I'm. We did put a scope through with the end of the drain where you could see daylight, and we could only get it up to about 35 feet, the scope. And the plumber said that he thinks my drain collapsed. So I'm not real sure if I needed grade my landscape into where I could slope water away from the house more than what's coming towards the house now.
Well, definitely if there's a way to move water away from the house from the outside, I pick that 100% of the time to, even if it doesn't 100% mitigate what's going on with water getting in your basement, even if it were to cut it in half, and you still needed to do work in the basement to handle that water and get rid of it, well, then just imagine it's handling half the water, so it's probably going to last twice as long and work twice as well with less water. So always try and examine outside and see if we can move water away. And that way you can do the outside and see how it works and see if it completely mitigates your issue or not. But if not, and it sounds like with the amount of water that you're talking about, you're probably going to need to get a sump pump installed in that basement from the inside that can pump that water back to the outside, run it down the hill, and get rid of it before it comes into the basement.
Yeah, that was an option I was looking at. It doesn't help that my my gutters were drained or clogged also.
Oh, yeah,
so I
yeah.
didn't notice. Yeah, so I got all that cleared out, but we haven't had a torrential rainfall lately, but I just don't want to dig 8 foot down, all the way down the, you know, the side of my property if I don't have to.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, yep, that's the other next step that could go before, and that's something you could look at kind of to see what the cost difference are, too, is to do you redo the drain around the outside to handle that water, and what is that cost compared to doing it from the inside and having a mechanical pump move water back out. Again, I like all the outside stuff because it gets rid of that water before it's coming around and under your footings, and it can help promote getting house settling, foundation settling, all these things happening down the road. So the more you can do from outside is great. But then a lot of times that's why these companies are here, because there's no other way to get rid of 100% of it. And you may not get rid of 100% of it, and you'll just need a company to come in and put a sump pump in that basement floor around the perimeter.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's what I'll look into. Then I'll do a little grading and then see how it holds up. And then afterward, just get a few quotes and have a sump pump put in.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
Do your gutters,
appreciate
do your
control.
Grading, and see if you can control it from the outside. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. Appreciate your show.
All right. And we got a break coming up here we're stuck into. So, Mike, if you can hold the lines all through the news, we'll get to you as soon as we're back. More to come after this. All right, everybody. We are back. Second hour of the KMOX Home Improvement Show. Rich Orris here for you, for everybody. Glad to welcome in the 97.1 FM listeners, along with the KMOX crowd. We've got plenty going on. We lost Mike through the break. We were hoping he would hold through the break, but I totally get it. It's a long break. Mike, if you're out there, feel free to call back. Anybody else, if you're out there, feel free to call in along with 97.1 KMOX. Everybody, same line, same number. Get you right to me, 314-436-7900. Finds me right here today. Got plenty of time for everybody today. So we're going to get straight to the phones here. We got Jim just called in, and let's see what's going on with Jim. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I guess. Thank you. My question is, we had an addition put on the house about a little less than 10 years ago, and it's got about a 40-foot spine on the ductwork, which loves to pop when the furnace comes on in the wintertime. And I'm wondering, why is it doing that, and what can I do to stop it?
So when the heat kicks on, you get like a popping noise in the ductwork?
Yeah, I'm sure it's due to thermal expansion. But.
Yeah, it's definitely just the expansion, the movement, and really the only thing you can do is to try and find that and find exactly where it's happening. You got to be near it. It's investigational work. Get close to it as it kicks on. When you get close to that pop, what I'd recommend doing is then trying certain things. Basically, just put your hand on it, maybe on the top of it or something, when the next time it kicks on, and see if there's anything you can put pressure on or do to mitigate that pop in that area. And I will warn you, because I've had people kind of say they solved it with putting just like a brick on top of the trunk right in the spot where that was happening. It added a little weight to that and stopped that from wanting to expand up and down. But you can do things like that to try and stop that movement. But a lot of times what I've also heard is I kind of did it there, and then all of a sudden it started over here. because it just kind of shifts, and it could be a battle you end up fighting down the line, and getting to where it is, stopping it in one spot, and then it starts happening somewhere else because it's just under pressure and all that's happening, and even literally uninstalling and installing a whole new ductwork system, no one will guarantee that's not going to happen. So
it
could just be a battle. I've also had someone put kind of like a threaded rod through it on the sides and kind of nut and washer on each side and tighten up the sides to each other and that kind of stopped that expanding up. But yeah, that's something like that in order to stop that expansion can help it out.
Well, the compounding factor is that it's enclosed by the drywall now.
Oh, if it's finished and it's all inside, yeah, then you really got a hard spot because you really can't see it or find it. So the only other thing I might say to try and recommend is if you're downstairs and you're near where it's happening, you could try to just do a few long screws like through the drywall that will reach that metal and see if kind of grabbing that metal and just giving it something there might help that also. I fixed one years ago by getting inside of it, but it was up between the joists, and of course we could get to the bottom of it, and it was happening between the plywood and the plywood subfloor and the metal, and so we just screwed with short screws a bunch of the metal to the actual underside of the plywood floor, and that kind of stopped that from happening as it was blowing through. So each circumstance is obviously a lot different than the other. And of course, if you do the screw trick and you get something up in there, then you've got to fix your drywall. Your
correct
tape, mud,
and it might
paint,
vibrate out of there anyway.
And it could. It very well could. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for the thoughts.
Yeah, no problem. You're in a spot with it being finished and everything. You might need some drywall work if you really need to get that stopped. But good luck with that, and let's jump over to Mike. He came back into the mix here. What's going on, Mike? Good to hear from you.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? It's Mike. Hey, question for you.
Uh-huh.
I have an atrium ranch built in 1986. The lower level has the old, like, the gravel and rock in the atrium part, but like, fake plants growing out of it.
Uh-huh.
Well, about an 8x12 section. We want to get rid of the rocks and maybe concrete that in and put like a tile or LVP floor on top of that.
Uh-huh.
What's the best procedure to do that?
I mean, it's basically a basement. It's installing a basement floor. So you want it to be just like the basement floor that's around it. So basically, you are just digging that out of there. You got to take out a lot more than just the concrete, because you want to get a good bed of rock underneath it. So you're digging out at least 8 inches of that dirt, and you're putting about a 4-inch layer of rock and tamping the rock with a tamper is a great thing to do, and then just pouring a 4-inch concrete floor back to fill that space in. And definitely when you do that, recommend giving it some time, because it will kind of shrink and over time and everything before you put any kind of flooring on top of it. Let that concrete really cure for a couple weeks, something like that, before you get too involved. Maybe even 30 days isn't a bad idea in whatever type of floor you put on top of that, especially if you did like a tile that mortared or glue down. Something like that. So let it cure good, and then you just put your floor on top of it just like a basement floor. Pick something like you're talking about that's good with basements, like a LVT or something like that, and you'll do well.
Okay. I have a question on that same deal. I've seen other basements. They have like a concrete, almost like a pit made out of concrete. Mine, I've dug down in there before. It's all dirt. There's no concrete walls underneath the basement floor. I believe it's just dirt all the way down. There's no concrete, like a coffin pit
Yeah.
Is that normal back in the '80s how they did that?
Yes, definitely normal. Most of them that I've seen, unless they were meant to be 100% fake all the time, because I've seen plenty of them that they have real plants in them.
And it's
down to the dirt, and that's why you're going and putting in that rock base and everything to kind of really try and support that concrete so it doesn't move later on.
Is that a 1-inch clean you use for that rock base, 1-inch clean, compact it then?
I'd do a little bit smaller, wouldn't hurt, like a half to three-quarter. That would compact well is definitely a good. I don't go any bigger than 1 inch for sure.
Do I need to put a vapor barrier down on that then too, or is that not necessary?
I mean, it's not a bad idea, but you're not doing the whole floor, so your vapor can still come around it at the edges and still get out. So it wouldn't hurt to do a vapor barrier, but if you do have a lot of moisture vapor down there, it's going to come around the edges of that anyhow and try and work its way up. So it's not the most important step in my eyes in an area like that.
Well, I thank you, Rich, for your time. I appreciate the information. You have a good day.
Thanks. Absolutely. No problem. Thanks for the call. Thanks for calling back. Appreciate that. And for everybody else, we'll be here for you. We're going to jump into our first break of this hour, but I'm right here. Don't forget, 314-436-7900. Get you right to me. Stay tuned and don't touch that dial. More home improvement after this. Okay, welcome back. Rich Orris here, Home Improvement Show. Here for everybody today. What do you have going on around your home? What are you thinking about? What are you about to do? You got that honey-do list. You got to get things. Oh, we got Halloween here. We got to get everything ready for Halloween. Have you decorated? Are you decorating? Are you looking and working around the house? Feel free. Give us a call. Get in on the questions, the conversations, and the answers. 314-436-7900. And speaking of Halloween, there's always things to consider when you're coming up to any kind of holiday where you're going to have people, guests, things going on around, and lots to take care of and how you do it all. So there are some tips and some safety tips and just what we should all be considering during this time. So last night we were at the trunk or treat at our local grade school there with my grandson walking around, and it's a lot of fun, but there's always things you kind of look and see and you go, oh, tripping hazards, and you really got to kind of watch out. So when preparing for something like this, I would definitely advise that outside, make those lights as bright as possible. When the porch light, any kind of walkway lights, anything that helps get people safely up to your house and back down is a great thing to consider how they see those walkways and how they get around. Another thing that we would definitely recommend is to open the storm door. Keep it open. Keep it propped open so you're not kind of working with two doors, and as people are coming up onto the porch and everything, just have a good area ready for them and accessible so you're not having to operate that at the same time as well. Use LED lights. So instead of candles, there's LED fake candles and lights that you can put inside the pumpkins. And so getting rid of the actual true real flames for something safer is another really great idea to consider inside your pumpkins and everything that you're doing. Motion lights, after the trick-or-treaters have left, that's another good thing to have, that motion sensor where it will illuminate up just for everyone's safety. And in case there's any, you know, just mischief makers running around out there, they want to have their fun, young kids egg the house, all the sorts of things that happen on Halloween, keep that motion, have that motion sensor light ready and light up, and maybe that'll help deter things like that from happening. Kind of that walkabout checking things that we've been talking about, check the railings and making sure that railings are tightened up, and anything that wobbles, steps, make sure the steps are sturdy. If you have wood steps or any kind of porch steps that aren't concrete, just making sure that they're good, they're safe, and everything's tight and ready to go. Think about a contractor or a handyman if it's outside of your means to correct something like that. But just keeping things working and safe for everybody. And then consider maybe some friction tape on some of those front steps to just keep everybody from slipping, falling, kids running around, all that. Good thing to keep all of them safe for you. And then just clear the curb. Really don't have cars parked in front of the house. Keep things wide open on the streets. Hopefully you have good street lights and everything's kind of visible. If not, maybe consider more lighting even further out. Something temporary would be perfectly fine, but just keeping the whole curb clear, street clear, so when people are driving around, they're not going around vehicles. So parking in the driveways and the garage and around back or anywhere you can like that is a great thing to consider doing for Halloween to make everything work and safe for everybody. Now, let's say some of that mischief stuff happens. Maybe you do get egged that night and you get up the next day and you've got some egg yolk on your siding, on your house. You can use kind of that same white vinegar solution with some warm water to clean that up, get it real nice and wet, let it sit there and soak for a good time, and then kind of clean up and sponge and remove that off of the house is an easy way to do that. The soaking is very important. Toilet paper from trees, that's pulling down that toilet paper with a rake, blowing it off with a leaf blower is a good trick to kind of trying to get that toilet paper out of your trees. A lot of that happening on Halloween. Something that we've done for years at Mosby Building Arts, especially in really highly populated neighborhoods, is trying not to have or moving the Johnny on the spot. So a lot of our jobs, we have a Johnny on the spot on site for outside exterior work, so the workers aren't tracking in and out of the house. And that always seems to be that wonderful prank in the morning. We'd always come back after Halloween and they're flipped over, they're upside down, they're on their side. It's a great big mess. So tucking the Johnny on the spots from your project away around back, sliding them closer to the house, hopefully would help mitigate something like that from happening as well. But kids will be kids. They want to have fun. They're going to do goofy stuff. And it's our job as the adults to try and just see if we can help and mitigate that and keep it from being so easy for them to do. But hey, we've got Steve just called in on the line, so let's jump over to Steve and see what's going on. Are you there? Can you hear me, Steve?
Yeah, I can.
All right, perfect. What's happening?
I bought a heater for my above-ground pool, and I'm wondering how I'm going to tie into the gas. You know, I don't know if I should run a whole new line out there, or if I should put, you know, right there at the meter, or if I got to put it on the inside and run a new line out there. And that's what I wanted to find out.
Okay.
I got Paul Amherst.
So is this, did you say it's a gas line you're trying to run for this heater?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a pretty nice heater, and, you know, I probably won't put it in for a while. I called to have the gas line marked, but it's right in line with the meter. I don't think I need to do that, but I just don't know if I should, you know, just dig down right next to the, you know, where it's going to go and tie into that gas line there, or if I should put it on the inside of the house where I can turn it on and off or whatever. But, I mean, I just need some information. I've never...
Sure. So for the most part, they always like to have the on and off close to the actual unit for workers that can shut that off if they need to service or do any work on it. So yeah, it's really you can come off right outside the house if that's a convenient spot to where the gas comes in the house. You can come right off of that pipe down into the ground and bury a line around to where this heater's going to go. There's going to be some rules and codes and stipulations to how deep you need to dig this trench down underground for the gas line and everything. But you can either come off there, or if your basement's open and your gas lines are around inside the house and say your meter's on the far side of the house, and the pool's on towards the other side, if it's easier, you can come from the basement out the wall and then do your trenching over to where that is. And you can have a shut off at both ends where it's in the house, and they'll require you to have one at and near that unit for servicing where that is. But yeah, you're just picking the shortest trench location in the yard, because that'll help your how much it costs and how much you're digging to get it there. And then you just pick where you're coming off the house with the gas line to get it over there. So, and then of course you got to make sure that you're looking at how much volume, what size gas line you need to that heater. How much is it going to pull, and does it need to be either a half inch or a 3/4 inch gas line? That's something you'll have to find out from the actual unit in the manual and installation guide of what size line does that require.
Well, I mean, can I just dig down where I know the gas line is, right next to the, you know, the where it's going to go, next to the pool filter, tie into that gas line right there?
Well, you'll need it to come off, probably not, because where your gas line is underground coming to the house is before the meter, and you need to hook this up after the meter.
Well, I mean, it goes, my meter runs right next to the, you know, right next to the filter and everything where I'm going to put that, you know, because they came out and marked it before I had the pool put in.
Uh-huh.
I know right where that's at. It's right underneath the, you know, the meter on the outside of the house, right. Just a straight line from that line going into the meter on the outside of the house. It's just a straight line all the way to the alley, you know. And I thought I could just dig down right there. They said it's only like 18 inches down or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that's a line for you, that is after your meter, where they'll see how much you're using, then you could do it that way. You just have to reassure that whatever size line you need for the heater, that line is big enough to come off of. Because that's the other thing you got to look at, is when you come off of a line, if it's a half-inch line going to something, and you need a half-inch line for the heater, if you just come off of it with another half-inch line, you might starve whatever that's trying to feed
right when
that heater runs. So you may have to upgrade that one, so it might be easier to go to something that's already a bigger line. So when it's coming in the house, that's like the biggest line.
Right.
So that's why most of them come off like right where it's coming in the house, because that's your biggest starting point. Because that's the problem with the other side of the house, is if you've got a line that runs all the way to the other side of the house, and that's more convenient, but the line's too small to support two things, then you might need to upgrade that line. Then you're right back at where does it make the most sense to do this from with the best investment, the lowest investment level of how I get it there.
Right.
And then making sure it's going to supply it.
Do you recommend putting like a shut off on the inside and the outside?
Yeah, you'll definitely need one on the outside. That's where it ties into the unit, so it's operable for a service person to basically reach over and be able to turn that gas off from that unit. So, yeah, I'd do it at both. I think that would be good.
All right, well, thank you. You've been very helpful.
All right, perfect. Hey, Steve, appreciate the call. And we're going to get into our middle hour break here for everybody. Don't forget, we're right here. You can find me, 314-436-7900. More calls, more questions, more topics after we return. Don't go nowhere. All right, we are back. More Home Improvement Show. Got time for some stories, some questions, anything you need. 314-436-7900. I'll tell you, if you have any spooky kind of ghost Halloween stories about your home, about where you live, that wouldn't be a bad topic right before Halloween. I've certainly working in very old houses and for years and years have one or two of my own kind of weird things that don't really have answers, and I just kind of, yeah, strange things in very old places that I just can't explain. So maybe we can get into some of those stories as well. But for now, we've got Brian on the line. Let's see what's going on with Brian. How you doing?
Yeah, I got a question about under-counter dishwasher. I've had it in there for about 6 or 7 years, and it seems like when I first started up now, I get this weird kind of nasty smell coming out of the kitchen sink, and I think the bottom of a dishwasher has like a filter in it, and I'm wondering if it's got over the years built up, you know, food or something on, that's what the smell's coming from.
Yeah, and it can also be in that drain line as well. So dishwashers do have a filter inside of them. Some newer dishwashers are actually starting to come with little kind of garbage disposals in them that'll help kind of chop stuff up and get rid of some of that. But you've got a flexible, you've got a filter. It's capturing things, but some stuff can get through it, around it. And then you've got this drain, this plastic tube drain hose that goes from underneath that dishwasher over to your pipe or your garbage disposal at the sink. So you could just have a lot inside of that line also. So I definitely would say it's a kind of cleaning thing to get to the filter, clean the filter, make sure that's all good, and then maybe even take that drain line completely off and either change it for a new one or clean it out, flush it out, make sure all the grime and stuff, because it's just like inside your drain pipes, under the sink, running through the house. It'll get scaly. It'll get things kind of stuck to the side, and you can kind of clean all that kind of black, scaly stuff out of there, and that will help with that smell.
Is there anything that I could possibly just pour into the dishwasher that'll possibly clean the lining of it out? I don't want to put anything like liquid plumber in it because that has a tendency to damage pipes.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. The only thing that I would recommend in the dishwasher is they do make dishwasher like soap tablets that you put in there when you run it, just like we use the packet things that we put in there. They make them to clean the dishwasher without your dishes and everything in there, just run it, and kind of just like a washing machine. They make a soap that you run your washing machine, and it cleans the machine. Same thing with the dishwasher. But I don't know that running that in the dishwasher is going to really help the line itself, because there we're talking about 6 or 7 years of buildup, and that line kind of works like a siphon, so it goes down and up and kind of almost creates like a loop to make that siphon work to get everything running through it. So you've got a low spot that holds debris in there, and that's where that could be coming from.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the information.
Absolutely. Good luck with that. And it is, it's such a good idea when you get new appliances, washer, dryer, dishwasher, to really look through and read what type of maintenance you need to have with that new appliance. I joined the club with everybody else. I'm guilty of it myself when we got a new washer and dryer years ago, and I ended up having to work on it and change some parts inside the tub of the washing machine that just literally got kind of caked up and dirty from the soap that we were using. And I didn't realize, and I didn't read enough into the instructions to say, you should wash your washing machine. And I'm thinking, well, I'm like probably most humans out there, it's a washing machine. You wash it every time you run something, right? Well, apparently not. And it can, depending on the type of soap and how it runs and how the whole thing works, you can end up with issues because of, that's why we talk all the time with these new washing machines, you want to use not as much as you think of powdered detergent, not liquid detergent, because the liquid, you end up using way too much, and it gets scaly stuff inside that washing machine, and there's actually packets of powdered soap you can buy to wash the washing machine. You run it through a cycle, and it washes that machine out. So now I'm doing that all the time when recommended to make sure I don't have to work on that machine again. And we've had a lot better luck with it now that we do that the way that it recommends with the amounts that it recommends. And it's just better for the machine and everything. So dishwashers, everything's kind of the same. There's a filter. There's all these things going on that you need to maintain and take care of. So, yep, there's a lot to do with all of that. But, hey, if you got anything else, we got another segment coming up. We're going to jump into our final break. But you can catch me in the last segment, 314-436-7900. Love to hear from you. Don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial and stay with us. All right. Last segment. Final. This is the final moments of our time together today. If you do have something, you can try and squeak in with me here real quick. Give me a shout. 314-436-7900. Got a few minutes left for you. But I was going to go back, and we were kind of talking earlier about what makes a good company and what does a company do, and how the employees of that company understanding, being happy, and just having good quality people that are happy at what they do, how that can help get good projects, good quality, good training for them. When you improve them, you improve everything and you make them feel better. So having employees that know and understand what's going on at the company and what the company talks about to the employees and what we're trying to accomplish, I think is a big piece of having good quality workers that create good quality jobs for clients that become family members of that company and want to be around and want to have work done time and time again, because it's such a pleasurable experience. And what the companies do for these clients, not just in pay and things, but in explaining and having a good culture and trying to keep everybody understanding and on the same team, and then understanding and knowing what the company does, where the money goes, how does everything happen. So I think what companies talk about to their workers, to their employees, to the people doing the work is very, very important. And obviously, if 90% of the work being performed on a job is by a subcontractor, the company really has trouble discussing too much with subcontractors and having that same kind of culture and personalism and people that want to be around and want to do well and want to really have happy clients in the end. So, yeah, I think what you do and what these companies kind of discuss and talk about with their employees is so, so important. And I look back at my history of employment from the beginning. It's been a lot of years now. And here at Mosby, and what kind of brings this up for me is we just had a few weeks ago, we had this meeting. It was a town hall meeting, town hall setting. We got to choose and vote on the topics that we talked about with the president of the company, questions he would answer and what he would kind of talk about. It made me think about what is all these other companies and people that I've worked for talk to me about in the past, dating all the way back to starting out working with my father and kind of always having this conversation about, well, we just need to be smarter, faster, earn more money. And in the end, this works out well. This could all be yours. You could run this. You could do this. And it was hard. And I just knew and I kind of felt in my hearts of hearts like there's something better out there. This is kind of tough. And I don't know that this is exactly what I want to be doing. And so I kind of went on search, different companies, different types of work, went to work for a siding and construction company where me and one other worker did basically all of the construction end, and the owner of that company basically had very few good, long, hard talks with him about, he would basically say, well, we're painting a picture and it's your guys' job to kind of build and put that picture together for us. And we just need you to do it really well. And we'd come back and say, well, we need you to paint that picture better, because if the cabinets are the wrong color, it really doesn't matter how fast I put them in or how well they're installed. When the client comes home and the cabinets are the wrong color, it doesn't work. And then he also kind of told me about his Florida properties that he bought, that he bought two Florida properties. One he wanted to build a house on and retire, and the other he was going to sell later when he went to do this in order to pay for the house to build on it, and how, well, the one he wanted to keep has gone up in value and the other one hasn't. I'm thinking, how does this help me? I went to work for a friend of mine, and he told me about how he took everybody to Cancun because they had such a great year. He took the whole company to Cancun. And he bought us all season passes to Six Flags when I did start working for him. And then later on, health insurance didn't get paid, got lapped. And my son had a surgery that ended up not being covered, and we're in it. And it's like, what are we talking about and what are we trying to do? So it's so different here at Mosby when you come in and you get to have this meeting where you get to pick the topics and you get to say, yeah, answer this and explain this to us. And they go through and explain where's all the every cent of a dollar go in the company and what are they trying to do and what's the plan for the future. So it just makes this great vision, this great mission, and this great just scenario that the whole company, including us, can be accountable for. And it's just such a different way in this industry than I've ever experienced to handle your employees and your people and to really include and involve them. I think it creates this atmosphere that we all know and love and want to be a part of. So that's why I'm here. That's why I do what I do. And that's what this company does to help that out. So, hey, we're at the end of our time here together. Had a great time. Everybody, remember, be good. Be good to each other. Be good to your homes. And I will talk to everybody next week.